Tonight our learning is sponsored by Harold Pearl in memory of his father Shmuel Elimelech ben Moshe David Zichrono Levracha. Tonight we turn to a topic that I've been saying we'd get to for a long time, a long anticipated question regarding the Minchas Chinuch's analysis of whether or not women are obligated in the mitzvahs assay of Shemitah. Now, three pieces of background information before we jump into tonight's sources. We're actually going to be starting tonight from source 6 because we spent a lot of time in sources 1 through 5. We never really got to source 6. We're going to be starting with source 6 tonight, but before we do, a couple of pieces of background. Number 1. Last year, it was 2 weeks ago, we discussed a parallel mitzvah to the mitzvah we're going to talk about tonight, which was the mitzvah of what the Sefer HaChinuch actually calls Shemitas Karka, which is the mitzvah not to desist from agricultural labor during the Shemitah year, but the mitzvah to make sure that all the produce of the Shemitah year is hefker. And the Sefer HaChinuch, that was mitzvahs peidalad in the Sefer HaChinuch, and the Sefer HaChinuch said that women are obligated in that mitzvah as well, which of course raises the question, why are women obligated in that mitzvah if it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama? It's a mitzvah saseh that applies on the 7th year, but it doesn't apply during years 1 through 6. So why are women obligated in that mitzvah? And in order to answer that question, we looked at a classic analysis of the Minchas Chinuch on that issue. He offered two avenues, two reasons to say women are obligated even though outwardly it appears like a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. The first was an analysis of that mitzvah itself. He questioned whether one actually has to get up and declare their produce hefker during the Shemitah year, or no, that's not how it works. The Torah is not asking you to do it. The Torah declares your produce hefker during the Shemitah year, what he called an afkata demalka. Whether or not you get up and declare your produce hefker, the produce is hefker. Within the first approach, you have a mitzvah to do it. If you don't do it, you've neglected that mitzvah, but I also can't come and take your produce because that would be gezel. You admittedly failed to perform your mitzvah sase, but the reality of that is that your fruit is not hefker. Within the second approach, you can scream and cry however much you want. The Torah declares your produce hefker, and that's it. And the Minchas Chinuch was arguing, if you take the latter approach, it's not really a mitzvah saseh shazman grama in the classic sense, but it's something else entirely, and therefore women would be obligated. That was one avenue, he said, that we can use to pursue to say that women will be obligated in the mitzvah. The second avenue was an argument that he was making about mitzvah saseh shazman grama. He said that because this produce, the produce that grows during the Shemitah year, always has Kedusha Shvias, its Kedusha Shvias is not confined to that year itself. Once the year ends, it will continue to have Kedusha Shvias, as we're going to have to discuss with all of our Asrogim next year. And somebody mentioned wine is a classic question if you discover that your wine was grown through a vineyard, in a vineyard during the Shemitah year. It always retains its Kedusha Shviya status, and because it always retains its Kedusha Shviya status, it's not really a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, either akin to the Machlokes in the Rambam and the Rush about tzitzis and ksos laila. That's what we spoke about last time. Fine. So that was the analysis of the Sefer HaChinuch and the Minchas Chinuch there. So that's point one. Now, why is point one important? Because the Minchas Chinuch that we're going to look at tonight is in Mitzvah Kuf Yud Beis, which is on the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah, the mitzvah saseh to rest and desist from agricultural labor during the Shemitah year. On that mitzvah, the Sefer HaChinuch never says that women are obligated. He never explicitly says that. What does he say? He says that the halachos of this mitzvah are all parallel to the halacha of making peiros hefker that I explained to you in mitzvah pei dalet. So we're going to see that the Minchas Chinuch argues that if indeed that parallelism is taken to its furthest degree, then just like women are obligated in the mitzvah of hefker peiros, they should be obligated in this mitzvah as well. That's piece of background number one. Piece of background number two is just a methodological analysis that we did on the Minchas Chinuch that we just discussed, where we broadened, in a sense, or at least kind of contextualized, what exactly he was doing in his analysis of that question. And I mention it again tonight because it's going to be critical for the shiurim that we have tonight and next week as well. We mentioned then, and we've highlighted this the last, I think, two shiurim, that very often halachic analysis lies at the crossroads of two different halachic principles, two different halachos, two different halachic concepts. In the case of the Sefer HaChinuch that we just discussed, he was discussing two different things. One was the nature of the mitzvah of hefker peiros shvias. Do I need to get up and declare it hefker, or does Hashem declare it hefker from on high? That was a conceptual question pertaining to peiros shvias. A second conceptual question he was raising was, what about mitzvah saseh shazman grama? What is the nature of mitzvah saseh shazman grama? If I have something that has kedusha shvias, it grows during the 7th year, but once it has that kedusha is permanent, do we perceive that as a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, or do we not? And it was the interplay between those two questions that formed the analysis of the Minchas Chinuch on that issue. And I said that that's, again, a very, very common paradigm, one of the most common paradigms in proper lumdus and proper Talmudic analysis, and it's something to bear in mind as we approach this question as well. Now our question is whether or not women are obligated in not the mitzvah of hefker perishvias, but in the mitzvah saseh of desisting from agricultural labor. So naturally, we will once again have to analyze two concepts. What are the two concepts? Number one, the nature of the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah. That's something that we actually discussed quite extensively earlier in the year. And second is going to be back to our classic question of mitzvah saseh shez mangram. Okay, fine. Point number two. Final piece of introduction is just to hearken back for a moment to our analysis of the mitzvah aseh of Shemitah, and in particular to remind everyone of the Minchas Chinuch's analysis of that mitzvah. Now, we're not doing a bechina here, so I'm not going to throw out questions, but I will say we did an extensive analysis of the Gemara Avodah Zarah on Daf Tesvav, and we came with two approaches as to what the mitzvah aseh of Shemitah is. Is it really just kind of a restatement of the lo sa'aseh, of the prohibition? Don't engage in agricultural labor, and the Torah re-emphasizes that, as it sometimes does, through a mitzvah saseh telling you to desist from agricultural labor. So you have a mitzvah lo saseh and a mitzvah saseh effectively telling you the same thing. Or no, does the mitzvah saseh go beyond the mitzvah lo saseh and tell you that the mitzvah saseh is to maintain a restful character to the Shemitah year? Make sure that the Shemitah year is, or ensure that the land rests during the Shemitah year. So some of the nafkaminos that we gave, one of the, perhaps the most poignant nafkamino was, let's say you go to an irreligious, not yet religious farmer, you go to a chiloni farmer, or perhaps even to a guy. We said that perhaps there was a distinction between those two, but in the most dramatic example, perhaps even to a guy, and you contract them to work your land during Shemitah. So it's certainly aser, either it's lifnei iver for a Jew, or it's amira lenachri for a guy. But we saw that the Minchas Chinuch said, not only is it lifnei iver and amira lenachri, you have violated the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah. The mitzvah saseh of Shemitah tells you, maintain a restful character to this year, make sure the land rests. By contracting somebody else to do it, granted you haven't violated the lo saseh, the prohibition is to work the land with your own hands, but you still have violated the mitzvah saseh because you have failed to properly maintain the restful character of Shemitah. We noted parallels to Shabbos, the famous Ramban that we read together in Vayikra Perek of Gimel about maintaining a restful character to Shabbos, even beyond the 39 Malachos. That was the Minchas Chinuch's analysis. And the Minchas Chinuch very firmly subscribed to that view of the mitzvah saseh. It's not just a restatement of the lo saseh. It's telling you proactively maintain the restful character of the Shemitah year. If you go out and contract somebody else to plant during the Shemitah year, you have violated the mitzvah saseh, according to the Minchas Chinuch. And again, we discussed other potential nafkaminas as well. Harisha, plowing, which the Gemara on Moed Katan Daf Gimel says is not narrowly within the lo saseh, perhaps it's within the mitzvah saseh, and the like. That was the Minchas Chinuch's approach to that question. Okay? Those form the three pieces of critical background for us. Now tonight, we're going to read two reasons why the Minchas Chinuch feels women should be obligated in the mitzvah saseh of Shvisas Haaretz, again, ensuring the restful character of the land. The first one I do not want to focus on tonight, but Be'ez Hashem, Bli Neder, we will return to next week. We will return to that one more extensively next week. What I want to focus on is the second one. Now, all of this is going to make certain assumptions about the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah, but insofar as that's a topic we discussed extensively, that's less interesting to me right now. He also makes really significant assumptions about mitzvah saseh shez mangram. And what I love about our analysis, or our potential analysis, of his second approach here is that you'll see how totally, at face value, unrelated areas of halacha can actually be really intimately intertwined. And in order to understand our questions about Shemitah, it's going to open up, again, portals into a totally disparate and seemingly different area of halacha and touch on some of its most fundamental questions. Ostensibly, this is a shiur on Shviyas, but we will come out of tonight, hopefully, with a profoundly different understanding of the mitzvah of Bris Milah. Why Bris Milah? So we'll see. Let's take a look at the analysis of the Minchas Chinuch. Okay? Good. Source number six. V'hinei harava mechaber kosav le'el parshas mishpatim. So he says, the Sefer HaChinuch earlier wrote in Parshas Mishpatim, that's mitzvah pei daled that we analyzed last time, Dinei mitzvah zu, he wrote all the halachos of this mitzvah here in Kuf Yud Beis. The Sefer HaChinuch writes Kuf Yud Beis in shorthand. He says, just look at what I wrote earlier in Pei Daled. V'kosav shehu kasher im ha'aseh desham. He says that our mitzvah, kashur im ha'aseh desham, that our mitzvah is tied to mitzvah Pei Daled. The Achar Kach Kasav, and afterwards he wrote in Mitzvah Pei Daled, Denohig Bezacharim Vinakevos, that both men and women are obligated in that mitzvah. That was, again, precisely the analysis that we were rehashing a moment ago. Second line, Mkain, Haaseizu Gamkain, Nohig Bezacharim Uvinakevos. If that is correct, then this mitzvah as well should apply to both men and women. It should apply to both Zacharim and Akevos. We have seats. We have to both Zacharim and Akevos. Henry, there are seats over here if you want. You okay? All right. Good. So why are both men and women obligated in this mitzvah? So as I said, we're going to look at two approaches tonight. So we're right now by the number one in source number six. That number one, of course, does not appear in the original text of the Menachas Chinuch. I added it for our convenience.
Is it undisputed that it's mitzvah say shezvan grama?
Well, that's exactly what we're going to get into right now, okay. Right? So it would appear to be, right? It would certainly appear to be seventh year, desist from working.
It's not, remember, because remember it starts earlier and ends later.
Even if it starts earlier and ends later, it doesn't apply in year two, doesn't apply in year one, right?
But you do have to keep count of where you are in the cycle.
But keeping count is not the mitzvah we're talking about, right? We're not talking about the mitzvah, let's say, of Sfiras Yovel, right? Of keeping the count, right? That's more of a mitzvah on Beis Din, right? So, counting mitzvahs are interesting. Are counting mitzvahs a mitzvah seish asman grama? I mean, the counting mitzvah that we have nowadays is, of course, Sfiras Omer. Sfiras Omer a mitzvah seish asman grama? According to the Rambam, it is. According to the Ramban, it's not. What's the problem with that? Okay, that's a shir for another time. But presumably, again, at face value, this would appear to be a mitzvah seish asman grama. Okay? Good. Number one. If we're dealing with some form of agricultural labor where it's also prohibited by a losa asay, kagon zriya, let's say planting, you know, putting seeds in the ground, the most obvious example. Das haraba machaber mitzvah resh tzadivav, the bold of source number six on the third line. Chol hecha diyesh lav gamkein muzharim hanashim af al haasay af de mitzvah asay shaz mangram. He's making the argument now that if there's an activity that's prohibited by both a losa asay and an asay, we know that women are obligated in a losa asay, women are obligated in all mitzvahs losa asay. So he says if there's overlap between a losa asay and an asay, even if the mitzvah asay is a mitzvah asay shazman grama, women are obligated in that mitzvah asay. Now that's not at all obvious. One could have claimed that they're obligated in the losa asay and they're not obligated in the asay, right? They only have half of the obligation. But he is arguing that they will be obligated in both. Is that reasonable? Certainly. And again, we're not going to get back. We will fly through the rest of this analysis, of this argument. But Be'ez Hashem, like I said, we'll return to it next week. So after the bold of source number six, he says, Ayin Shom L'Inin Yom Tov. The context there is Yom Tov, right? That's a classic example. Zachor V'Shamor B'Dibur Echad. We referenced this in the past as well. You have the Asay of Shabbos connected to the Losa Asay of Shabbos. Anyone who's obligated in Shemira is obligated in Zechira and the like. Fine. V'das Tosos Kiddushin Eino Kein. He notes that not everybody agrees with that. Tosos don't think that way. Umuva Kamen Pa'amim B'Chibor Zeh. He says this is something that I talk about all the time. You can see this lots of other places in the Menachas Chinuch. We're now, again, three lines from the bottom of that first paragraph after the period. Al Kopanim Nicha L'Das HaRav HaMachaber D'Noshim Gankim Mizharim. He says, okay, fine. Then I can understand why women would be obligated in some components of the mitzvah, I say. Ach Bacharisha, he says. However, when it comes to plowing, and what did we say about plowing? It is not included in the losa asay. Two lines up from the bottom of the first paragraph. De eino rak asay. It is only a mitzvah asay. It is not a mitzvah losa asay. We said according to some, it's not even that. According to some, it's only midrash rabbanon. But it's certainly not a losa asay to oraisa. V'havale mitzvah asay shazman grama. It clearly is mitzvah asay shazman grama. Imkein yu nashim peturim mi mitzvah zo. He says, then women should be exempt from this. But if you just looked at the Sefer HaChinuch, you would not get that impression. You would get the impression that they are obligated in the mitzvah say that includes Charisha. And the Rambam doesn't make any distinction either. Okay? That's food for thought. File that away for next week. Yeah, Rami.
Is there a distinction between a mitzvah that is performed and fulfilled by not doing something, like a Shebaz Hasek?
Good. So we're going to get into that too next week. Or we'll see how much we cover this week and next week. But yes, that's going to be another argument to the Menachas Chinuch that he does not register here in Mitzvah Kufya Beis. He himself does not like that argument, but we'll see a Chassam Sofer that embraces that argument. And it's going to get, it's a very important question in general about how we perceive a mitzvah asay that is performed b'shev ve'al ta'ase, right? In other words, we have one distinction between mitzvah asay and mitzvah lo asay, right? An active mitzvah versus a do it, like a positive command versus a prohibition. We have another distinction between what we call a mitzvah b'kum v'asay versus a mitzvah b'shev ve'al ta'ase, a mitzvah that requires proactivity, it requires you to get up and do something, versus a mitzvah that is done by omission rather than commission, right? That you just shave al tasa, you just remain passive. Now, ordinarily, those two are correlated, right? Mitzvah asay is more often than not kumba asay, right? I mean, put on tefillin, put on tzitzis, eat matzah, etc. Ordinarily, mitzvah los asay is shave al tasa. Don't eat trefos, don't eat nevelos, don't eat behemoth tamea, etc. But you have instances where that doesn't always line up. You could have a mitzvah asay that is done b'shev al tasa. Shabbos, Shvias, right? The examples that we're talking about that are primarily done through Sheva Al Tasa. You could have a Losa Asay that is done, that is a Mitzvah Asay that is done be Sheva Al Tasa, that you perform, that you fulfill the Mitzvah be Sheva Al Tasa. You could have an Avera where you fulfill the Avera become Ba'asay. What's an example of that? Ba'yira Ba'yimatzeh. Owning Chametz on Pesach, right? So how do you, that's, again, it's not like going to eat non-kosher food, just owning it is a problem, right? So, and you get around it by the mitzvah of tashbizu, by getting rid of your chametz before Pesach, right? So they don't always correlate. So how do we perceive those middle cases where you have a mitzvah saseh that's sheva atase and a lo saseh that's kumba ase? So we'll have to get into that too, okay? But that's definitely on target, but not our analysis for this evening, okay? Well, going back to that point number one in the Minchas Chinuch, again, note that he is doing a subtle analysis of correlation or cases where we have overlap between a losa asay and an asay. He's arguing that when there's an activity that is barred by the losa asay, women should be obligated in the asay as well. But if I can come up with a scenario where the asay extends beyond the losa asay, like plowing, then women should not be obligated. Is that so obvious? Maybe, maybe not, right? So that's a topic that we'll Bezer Hashem get back to. Okay, fine. But the key for us for tonight is number two. Now, what we're going to do right now is the following. We are going to read the second argument of the Minchas Chinuch, okay? It is based on a ritva. Next, we're going to see the sources leading up to the ritva, the Gemara Kiddushin that the ritva is based on, and the ritva himself. I want us to think about whether the Minchas Chinuch's read of the ritva is the only read of the ritva, or can the ritva be understood in a possibly different way? And if the ritva can be understood in a possibly different way, what is it and why is it significant? Okay? That's our job for tonight. Part two of source number six, two lines from the bottom. Ach kvar kasati mimitzvah Shabbos l'inyan shvisas behema. I already wrote in the context of Shabbos that on the matter of shvisas behema, now again, shvisas behema is the mitzvah to ensure that your animals rest on Shabbos. You're not actively violating Shabbos, but you have to make sure that your animals rest too. Now, Shvi'as Behema is very important for the Menachas Chinuch here. Why? Why is it so important for the Menachas Chinuch? Why is it so critical for him? That was his whole parallel, exactly. That was his whole parallel to Shemitah. Just like you need to make sure your animals rest on Shabbos, you need to make sure your land rests on Shemitah. That was his analogy the entire time. That was his comparison. So Akvar Kosavdi Mr. Shabbos Linyan Shvisas Behema. I already wrote in the context of Shabbos by the imperative to make sure that your animals rest. Al Pidivre Haritva Kiddushin Al Kushyas Hatosvos Shahikshu. I made a comment based on the Ritva, who himself is answering a kasha of Tosvos. Lama li bimila osovalo osa de inanosha mitsuban almilas benayim. Now, I can translate that line, but before I do, let's skip to source number seven. Source number seven is going to form the critical background for this entire discussion of the Minchas Chinuch, the Ritva, and all the other Rishonim that we look at tonight. This is a Gemara Kiddushin. Source number seven is a Gemara Kiddushin on Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph. The Mishnah on Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph in Maseches Kiddushin is the classic source that outlines this principle of mitzvahs aseh she'azman grama. The rule that we know, b'chol Torah kula, mitzvah aseh she'azman grama, comes with this mitzvah in Mishnah in Kiddushin. It's a classic limud. Lots of times we'll do it in high school over a summer or something like that. Daf Chav Tes, Daf Lamed, Daf Lamed Aleph. It's a classic segment of Maseches Kiddushin. It has some very fundamental yesodos in mitzvos, like, for example, this notion of mitzvahs aseh she'azman grama. And it has a nice discussion of what we call mitzvos ha'av al aven and mitzvos ha'ben al aav. Obligations from parent to child and child to parent. So it actually it constitutes a very nice limud. There's a lot of nice lumdus, and it's very easily accessible, so it's good for kids, and it's also just important principles and parent-child relationships and the like. So of course, if there's a discussion of obligations from parent to child, it includes the mitzvah of milah. And the Gemara says that a father is obligated to ensure that his son has a bris milah on day 8, but a mother is exempt from this mitzvah. Now the Gemara asks, Ihi minalon delo michaiva. Source number 7. How do I know that she is not obligated? And the Gemara quotes a pasuk. Dichsiv ka'asher tziva oso elokim, oso velo osa. Skip to source number 8 for a moment. We have a pasuk in Bereishis Parakof Aleph, pasuk Dalet. La'yamol Abraham esitzop eno ben shmanas yamim. Abraham gave his son Yitzchak a bris milah. Abraham Avinu does a bris milah on the 8th day of Yitzchak Avinu's life. Ka'asher tziva oso elokim, as Hashem commanded him. And jumping back to source number 7, the Gemara says, oso velo osa. It's a command for him, but not for her. The Gemara continues after the bold. Ashkechan miyad ledoros minalan. Maybe that was only in the instance of Avram Avinu. This is not the pasuk in Parshas Tazria that tells you that you have to do bris milah always. This was a particular historical instance. So maybe it was only then. How do you know that it applies for perpetuity? Tana devei Rabbi Yishmael. We learn from Rabbi Yishmael. Kol makom shenet mar tzav eino ela ziruz miyad ledoros. Whenever you have the word tzav, kasher tziva oso Elohim. Whenever you have a word of command, it is a word of command urging alacrity, both in that immediate instance and for perpetuity as well. How do we know that it indicates alacrity? That's because of the pasuk that says, Tzav as Yoshua v'chazakeyu v'ametzeyu, the language of chazak v'amatz, of encouraging Yoshua, of giving him words of encouragement, indicates zeruz. So you have another pasuk that teaches you that it applies for perpetuity. Fine, that is the limud of the Gemara.
What about tzipor?
V'tikach tzipora tzor. So that's a whole discussion in the poskim. I'm not sharp on the details right now, I confess. Sorry? No. Again, it's a whole discussion as to whether or not a woman can do a bris milah, but it's not her obligation. It is clear that it is not her obligation. It was Moshe Rabbeinu's obligation. She did it on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Mishnah Nedarim says Moshe Rabbeinu himself should have done it. The Mishnah Nedarim criticizes Moshe Rabbeinu for not doing it earlier. But again, I don't remember the exact discourse on whether or not that indicates that a woman can halacha l'maisa do it l'doros, in reference to what Ari was saying, or not. But that's the discussion. But it was certainly not her chiyuv. It was certainly not her obligation. Okay? That's clear from the Gemara here. Now, what's the obvious problem with this Gemara? Just look at the bold of the Gemara. What's the obvious problem?
Why do you need a pasuk?
Ihi minolon delo michaiva. How do I know that a woman is not obligated to do bris milah? What should the answer be? Mitzvah zazesha asman grama. You can't do it on day 1, can't do it on day 2, can't do it on day 3. It's a mitzvah that applies on day 8. It's a mitzvah zazay, right? It's clearly a mitzvah zazay to do milah. That should be good enough to say that a woman is not obligated. It's a mitzvah.
From day 8 on. So on day
14. Good. So you're already, Moshe, you're already mechamed to Tosvos. So we'll get there. So again, so that's already an argument of Tosvos. But at face value, that should be enough to say that it is a mitzvah asay. It appears to be a mitzvah asay shazman grama. And insofar as it appears to be a mitzvah asay shazman grama, that should be sufficient reason why nashim are exempt, why women are exempt. You shouldn't need this extra pasuk. Okay? That is going to be a major question. We're going to see tonight 3 different answers in the Rishonim. And each of those answers is critical and fundamental to our understanding of both mitzvah asay shazman grama and, like I said, Mila as well. You see how already we're getting from Shvius quickly to Mila. But let's turn back to our good old Minchas Chinuch, okay? So he says, look, my question here is, why are women obligated in the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah? He says, I'm going to bring you a rule about mitzvah saseh shazman grama that we know from this Gemara about bris milah. So the classic question is, why do I need a pasuk to teach me that women are exempt from bris milah? So he's going to offer his read of the Ritva. We're in the second bold passage of source number 6, at the very bottom of the page. But Tirei Taritva. Here's the Ritva's answer. The Klal Zed, the Mitzvah Saseisha Hazman Grama, Nashim Peturos, this general principle that women are exempt from Mitzvah Saseisha Hazman Grama, Eino Rak B'Mitzvah DeBegufa. This is only true of a mitzvah that applies to one's person. And he gives examples. Tefillin, right, is a classic example of Mitzvah Shebegufo, to the extent that you can't even hand it off to a shliach. Agency doesn't apply to tefillin, right? Because it has to go on your arm. You can't tell somebody else, please put on tefillin on your arm and I should be yotzei, have me in mind. It's a mitzvah shebegufo. Tzitzis, same thing, right? The second example is tzitzis. You have to be wearing tzitzis to fulfill the mitzvah. You can't ask somebody else to put on tzitzis on your behalf. When it's a mitzvah shebegufo, then women are exempt. Uchadoma and other examples that are parallel to it. Aval mitzvahs mila, but the mitzvah mila, eino begufo, it's not on your own person, it's on your child. Obviously, in the case of a woman, it's not on her own person, it's on her child. Eino bechlal zeh, in those instances where it's not on your person, it's not within this rule of mitzvah seishas man grama, begam nashim chayavos. And women would be, not exempt, obligated as well. That's the general principle, okay? And then he says, Al karchach tzarech miyot osov lo osa, or al kain tzarech miyot osov lo osa. Therefore, you need the pasuk to teach you that she is not obligated in mila, because otherwise she would be obligated since it's not a mitzvah shebegufa. Now bring this back to Shemitah. How is the Minchas Chinuch, how is he going to close his argument? What's the closing piece of his argument? So why are women obligated in the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah?
Not on your body.
Why is it not on your body?
It's
because according to the Minchas Chinuch, l'shitaso, what is the mitzvah? It's not just a restatement of the losa asay telling you not to work the land. According to him, what is it? It's a mitzvah on the land. Make sure the land rests, right? So it's no longer a mitzvah begufo. So you see how, again, he very neatly ties together the analysis from two totally disparate areas of Shas, but brings them together in order to construct one concrete argument. Premise number one, if there's a mitzvah that is not begufo on your person, even women are obligated, despite the fact that it's time-bound. Premise number two, Asay of Shemitah is such a mitzvah, because it is a mitzvah on the earth rather than on you. Now, of course, if you dismiss either of those premises, the argument falls apart. So the Chazon Ish, who disagreed with the Minchas Chinuch analysis of the mitzvah Asay of Shemitah and held that it is a mitzvah begufo, would disagree. And, of course, as I alluded to a moment ago, we're going to have to analyze the second premise as well, this premise about how he's reading the Ritva. But that is how he constructs an argument to say that women should be obligated. Women are obligated if it's not a mitzvah on your person. Asay of Shemitah is not on your person because it's on the earth. Therefore, ipso facto, women are obligated. Modus ponens, we would say, women are obligated. Okay. I just finished the Minchas Chinuch. Again, we'll take it from the end of the bold, three lines up from the bottom. Alkein tzarech miyot osov la'osa. That's precisely why we need the special pasuk to eliminate women from the obligation of mila. Imkein gabe shvisas behema. He starts with, again, his analog from Shabbos. When you're dealing with an animal resting, the gamkein ein ha mitzvah begufo, rak mitzvah al behemto. Two lines up at the bottom. There too, it's not a mitzvah on your person, it's a mitzvah on your animals. Alkein nashim chayavos. Therefore, women are obligated. Therefore, it's not going to be a seisha zman grama. And then he closes the argument. So too here, where I argued the mitzvah saseh is ensure the rest of the earth, just like on Shabbos you have to make sure that your animals rest. The mitzuvim, anachnu, final line, al shvisas ha'aretz, the critical words, right? That we are commanded to make sure that the earth rests. Imkein ein ha-mitzvah begufo. Then we will see that the mitzvah is not on your person. V'nashim gamkein mitzuvim al ha'aseh kamo ha'nashim de'enu mechlam mitzvah seishas v'an grama, kanal barer. Therefore, it's not a mitzvah on your person. And we just said that when it's not on your person, even if it's time-bound, women are obligated. Okay? That is the argument of the Minchas Chinuch. Tov. Now, what I want to do, as I said a moment ago, is I want to look at the Ritva that his whole analysis is based on. And I want to look at whether his read of the Ritva is necessarily mukhrach in the Ritva. And I guess what I'd like to do in a broader sense is I want to look at three answers that the Rishonim offer to this question in the Gemara Kiddushin. Three answers to this question about mitzvah saseh shazman grama. And each of them is remarkably fundamental in its own right. I think each of the mitzvos here, each of the answers here of the Rishonim, reveals, at least potentially reveals, very fundamental principles, three of the most central questions in the halachic analysis of the mitzvah of milah. And again, you see the crossover here. We came from a question about mitzvah saseh and shmita and mitzvah saseh shazman grama. And then there's another parallel between milah and mitzvah saseh shazman grama. So one step leads to the next, and we end up immersed in a discussion of milah. But let's start it with the ritva that the Menachas Chinuch bases his entire analysis on. The ritva is quoted in source number 9. Says the Ritva as follows. Again, we're just going to read it, okay? We know how the Menachas Chinuch reads the Ritva, and I ask you whether that is the only possible read of the Ritva, or can we possibly read it differently? Source number 9. Ve'ihi minalon delo michayva lamul espina. The Gemara asked, how do we know that a mother is not obligated to perform a bris milah on her son? Chitema lama likra. And if you want to ask, why do I need a pasuk? Tepukli deha mitzvah saseh shazman gramahi. Maybe it should be a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. This is the question of Tosis that we referenced at the outset. Note how the Ritva quotes the question. Demila bayom velo balayla v'nashim peturas. Moshe, getting back to your point before, right? When the Ritva quotes the mitzvah saseh shazman grama, he says it is because of the fact that you can't do mila balayla. He does not talk about day 8. Other Rishonim are going to talk about day 8. Okay, so that will be important too. But when the Ritva quotes the question, he just notes that you can only do it during the day and not at night, which would certainly be sufficient to render it a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. And the Ritva answers in bold. Iko lameimar. Again, I'm just going to try to do my best to really just narrowly translate and really not expound. Iko lameimar. Perhaps we can claim. Tehazam hu b'mitzvah denafsha. There, when we say a woman is exempt, it's by a mitzvah of her own, denafsha. Aval hacha b'mitzvah debina. Here, where the mitzvah is of her son, hava amina de michayva. I would perhaps think that she should be obligated to lo gara mi beistin de michayve le mimhalei. It's no worse than beistin who have the obligation to give him a bris milah. Lahachi itzterech kra le miftere dechsev oso velo osa. Therefore, I need a pasuk to exempt her. The pasuk says oso velo osa. That is the Ritva's analysis. Menachas Chinuch understands that as saying any instance where the mitzvah say is not on your guf, on your person, a woman is obligated. Is that what the Ritva is saying? So it's not what the Ritva is saying? Because you know that's what I'm going for. What?
The obligation exists. She's the Makarsha Mitzvah for her kid.
So what?
Not about her.
Okay, so what do you...
It's not on her.
It's not her role.
The fact that it's on the baby.
So but it's not on the father.
She's not doing it, then the basis. Somebody okay. is a chiyuv, but it's not necessarily on her.
Okay, good. So I would think, if I were just reading this Ritva without the Menachas Chinuch, I would suggest that the most obvious read of the Ritva is directly in line with what you are all saying. The Ritva isn't saying that whenever there's a mitzvah obligation that's not on your person, on your guf, on your body, but extends beyond because you have to ensure the restful character of the earth or the restful character of the animal, etc., then a woman is obligated. He's saying here she has no mitzvah obligation in the first place. And here, as I alluded to a moment ago, we get into one of the most central questions of mitzvah milah. Whose mitzvah is it? Whose mitzvah is bris milah? You're performing a mitzvah on an 8-day-old baby. Ordinarily speaking, 8-day-old babies do not perform mitzvah saseh mita oraisa. So here you have this very strange construct. Clearly the Torah creates some obligation on the father. There's clearly some obligation on the father. Now what exactly is the character of that obligation is part of the question. Is it really his mitzvah? Or do we say it's really fundamentally the child's mitzvah, and the father is almost designated as a special kind of shliach min haTorah, the Torah almost designates him as a special kind of shliach to perform the bris milah. What is the father's status when it comes to bris milah? And again, this is all sorts of different nafkamina.
Can you parallel to Talmud Torah? Meaning the person has a chiyuv of Talmud Torah. The father has a chiyuv to teach the child. The chiyuv is only to one who's chayuv of Talmud Torah, which is the father. While the mother has an obligation to teach and raise the child.
I hear what you're saying.
Is the child's obligation when it comes to mitzvah.
Right.
But the father's obligation until it becomes
right. Right, correct.
So maybe it's parallel.
No, it could be directly parallel. And mind you, again, that fits within the paradigm mitzvos ha'aval ha'ben. In other words, these are the obligations that you have father and child. It's an interesting parallel. I never really thought about it as an analog, but I think it fits. It fits. So you have this central question within Mila as to what the father's role is. For example, Sorry?
This isn't charach.
No, this is the mitzvah itself.
It's a real mitzvah, right?
Right.
So it's different than...
No, the Hanger is saying a father has an obligation to be melamed Torah libido, not chinuch b'mitzvos, right? You have chiyuv limanat melamed Torah, so would that be parallel? But again, just to quote some of the classic questions that come up. What is the nusach ha-bracha when you do a bris milah? According to the Rambam, there's a different nusach ha-bracha if the father is doing the milah himself than if a mohel is doing the milah, right? Now, that might be reflective of the fact that when the father himself is doing it, it could be that the mitzvah itself has a different character than when a mohel is doing it. A mohel does not have any special obligation, right? A mohel obviously is performing a mitzvah.
The mohel is a shliach for the father.
Correct. So again, so perhaps, we'll get back to that in a second, AB, but perhaps you can claim that when the mohel is doing it, the most he could really be doing is facilitating the fact that the child is mohel, the fact the child is... has a bris milah.
But he's also being mekuyim what the father's obligation is.
But perhaps not. In other words, the fact that the Rambam has a separate nusach ha-bracha for specifically when the father does it means that perhaps that can't be outsourced. Or I guess let's get into the second question, which is, can you have shlichus for milah at all? That's a discussion in the Achronim. Some of the Gedolei Achronim were makbid to do milah themselves. They say that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik did milah on his oldest son, and they wouldn't let him do it for any of his other sons. So they said that you know, again, like, and again, Poskim say that you shouldn't do it because you get nervous, whatever. Okay, you know, nowadays people say, I've had the shayla. People said, oh, the mold said they're going to set up the clamp and everything. I said, don't do it. Just let the mold do it. That's, you know, so one, again, I appreciate the lumdos. I do. I appreciate the lumdos. But just let the mold do it.
Why don't
but,
you hold the mole's arm, like, what is there when you're running a city car?
Yeah, it's just not. Just don't. Again, it's a great lumdus, but not lumdus shalola maisa. Yeah, exactly. Just let the mole do their thing, okay? But give me one second, Isaac. So all of those reflect that perhaps there is a different character to the father's obligation, where the father is obligated, but it's also conceivable that no, it's really the child's obligation, and the father is just almost like what we would call a Torah designated agent on behalf of this 8-day-old child who's incapable of doing it themselves to perform this mitzvah for him. Look at what the Ritva's comparison is. He says, Lo gara mi basedin de mechayve lemimhalei. Now, when it comes to basedin, do basedin have a special obligation to do milah on the child? You can make that claim, but it's unlikely. It's far more likely that basedin are aviyim shal yisomim, right? Basedin are given the special obligation. They're messengers of Hashem and serving as you know, the watch, the guardians for Yisomim, and if there's no father involved, they have to step up and make sure that this child's obligation is discharged and fulfilled so that he is able to perform bris milah. So it seems like the Ritva is saying, I would have thought that a woman is exempt because it is not her mitzvah at all. Not because whenever, as a general rule, whenever there's shvisas behema or shvisas aretz, a woman is obligated, but because here it's not her mitzvah at all. Now, of course, what's the next question you need to raise? And this is, again, a classic Gemara construct that we've dealt with in the past also. That was the Hava Amina. So what is the Maskana? Once we have the Pasuk, what is the Pasuk teaching us? And it could be teaching us one of two things. What are the possibilities for the Maskana? What are the possibilities for the Maskana?
It's not her mitzvah.
The Hava means that it's not her mitzvah. So one option is it is her mitzvah, or it is the father's mitzvah, or the alternative is even though it's not the father's mitzvah and you would think women are obligated, I have a special puzzle. Exactly. In other words, so again, that's always the question that we have when we have a Hava Mina. Do we reject the premise entirely? Or do we maintain the premise, but just reject its application or its ramifications? Do we say that, oh, you thought that it's really the child's mitzvah and the father has no mitzvah and that's why women should be obligated? Oso v'lo osa comes to teach you, oh, so it's his mitzvah. It's not just the child's mitzvah. Or no, we would say no. In a chinami, it really is the child's mitzvah, but we have a special pasuk to limit the mother's obligation, even though you would think she would be chayavas. So those are two ways of learning the maskana. But either way, the Ritva is potentially touching on a major fundamental question within the halachos of milah. Now, bringing it back to our analysis, of course, if that's correct, then it wouldn't necessarily have application for mitzvah seseh shazman grama beyond mitzvah milah. We're not saying that, again, it's a general principle in mitzvah seseh shazman grama that whenever the chiyuv extends beyond your gufrei, it's a narrow halacha pertaining to milah, not because it's a mitzvah seseh shazman grama that she has. It's not her mitzvah at all. It's not her mitzvah at all. That's the point of the Gemara. That's the point of the Gemara, then you'd have a very fundamental question at play within Hilchos Milah, but that wouldn't necessarily have application for other mitzvahs, asay, shazman, grama. So that is the Ritva's analysis of this question. That's how the Menachas Chinuch understands it and expands it to our case of Shemitah, but also the qualification as to why it may not apply. So we'll close with a couple of questions. Isaac, yeah.
Kasher Tziva Hashem Oso.
Right.
Who else did Hashem speak to about this other than Avram? He never spoke with a woman.
Right.
He never spoke with anybody.
Right.
Except Avram. So right. Why would you limit...
You're making a very strong argument of what we would call Pshuto Shel Mekra. Pshuto Shel Mekra is Kasher Tziva Oso Elohim, as Hashem commanded him, right?
That's not what we learned the mitzvah from.
And it's not the source of the mitzvah either. That's referenced in the Gemara too, right?
No, but it's in Yav Har Sinai. That may be, you know, a core base, but it's not forever.
So again, this is the Gemara itself referenced that, right? The Gemara itself dealt with that tension, right? Ashkechan miyad ledoros minolan. So again, so Isaac, whenever you're dealing with drash, right? Chazal felt, and I'm not attuned to their powers of drash. Again, nowadays we don't really have the kalim of drash the way Chazal did. But Chazal recognized that even as obviously the pshut Shel Mikra is like you're saying, it's Hashem commanded Avraham Avinu.
It's not just the Mikra, because if Hashem spoke with six people, right, and three of them were men and three of them were women.
Again, I understand. I understand. I understand your point.
You can say it's man.
Again, you're asking a kasha on a drasha. And as much as I hear where you're coming from, because again, I confess to you that I myself don't have the kalim. I don't have the tools to make drashas in Chazal. I have enough faith and bitachon in Chazal that this was a valid drasha on the level of drash, even as on Pshuto Shel Mikra, yes, it is Hashem speaking to Avraham Avinu. I'm masking, in essence. Yeah.
I heard an explanation that it's the father's mitzvah because by doing bris milah on his son, he's accepting his own bris.
Whoa. That's an interesting idea. Well, you saw that?
I heard that from Eli Weber, actually. He's giving a
shit. Yeah, does he have I'm sure he has a mar. If you heard it from Eli, I'm sure he's a mar makom for it. I've just never seen that. That's very interesting. That's very, very interesting. And that's, again, an interesting way of tying together the two components of the mitzvah of lamul and the mitzvah of lihyos. Mahul. In other words, again, the mitzvah of doing a milah and the mitzvah of having a bris milah. Famous Gemara about David HaMelech, it's Gemara Menachos, that he went into the Beis HaKiseh and he was all despondent that he had no mitzvahs, right? He had no mitzvahs because he didn't have mezuzah and he didn't have tefillin and he didn't have, you know. So he saw his bris milah and he had hanachama. So that's a very interesting Gemara, right? That's not doing a bris milah, right? That's just having a bris milah. So the assertion there is that having a bris milah is part of the mitzvah. And again, that's part of the fundamental question that the Ritva raises. Now, that is only one answer to this question. And we saw that there are two very different ways that you can understand it. Our suggestion for how to understand the Ritva and the Menachas Chinuch. Next week, Be'ez Hashem, we'll see two other ways that the Rishonim address this same question of Tosfos, about why we need a pasuk to limit Nashim from Mitzvah Seishas Ban Krama. And we will see that, as I suggested, each of them will open up other very fundamental and central questions about the nature of Mitzvahs Milah. Good check.